Welcome to the Ice Lab Podcast. We are your hosts, Michael Marinaro and Trent Michaud.
We are going to take you deep into our labs, as well as many different high-performance professionals we've connected with on our journey as we strive for excellence. Welcome back, Ice Labbers, to another episode of the Ice Lab Podcast. Michael, what's up, buddy?
Not too much. Just got back from Skate Ontario Sectional Championships. Went to cheer on some fellow training mates, watch the pre-novice, junior, and senior pairs. Was a pretty good showing for the short program. Was quite impressed. A lot of good skates and some really, really talented young teams in the pre-novice category. So was super impressed.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what we like to hear. We like to see, pair skaters. We're supporting pair skaters. Let's go, baby.
Yeah.
So I just got back from the rink, actually, myself, not the Skate Ontario Sectionals, but we just had Evan and I just had an hour practice today because we leave for Japan tomorrow for NHK Trophy. Super excited about that. Mike just got back from Skate Canada. Good job, buddy. It was some tough stuff, but some good stuff, and just going to keep going, right?
Yeah, it was a major, major disappointment. Didn't envision the start of the Olympic season starting out that way. But that being said, we know what we have to do. Excited to get in a couple of big weeks of training here before Rostelecom Cup, where we can redeem ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it's about, man. You gotta, it sucks, but we learn more from our mistakes than we do from the things that we do very well, unfortunately. So
100%.
We got to take them now and make it and get what we want done for when we need to, which is January.
January.
It's going to be here before we know it. It's already November. We were just talking about this. All of a sudden, we have one more competition left after our next Grand Prix before Nationals. It's crazy.
Yes, it's just flying by. Once October hits and the Grand Prix start, just flies by. So that January National Championships is going to be here just around the corner.
Yeah, crazy to think. So our next guest that we have on today is actually going to be traveling with me as well to NHK this weekend. So, tomorrow, which is actually, this will be out while we're in Japan, but... So our next guest, is a national champion of Canada in every category, all the way from juvenile to senior. I think he was the youngest to win juvenile to all the way through to junior. He's 2014 junior world champion, 6-time world team member, and he also is a Grand Prix medalist and, good friend of ours, Mr. Nam Nguyen.
Thanks, Robbie.
What's up, buddy?
Yo, yo, yo.
How's it going, man? All ready to go? Did you pack yet?
Living the dream. I'm actually just starting to pack. I don't know if you guys have the visuals, but yeah, I'm just starting to pack and looking forward to heading to Japan again, baby.
Yeah, let's go. This is actually my first NHK trophy, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like any other Japanese competition. It's so great. It's so organized. But I think we're in a bubble time around, so... That's whatever, but looking forward to it regardless.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, the hospitality in Japan is always, always top notch. It sucks going to one of the best cities in the world in a bubble, but I'm sure the hospitality will be upped and you guys will have a good time for sure.
Yeah, the food. I'm excited for the food, man. When we went to Worlds in Saitama, that was Mike. After Mike and I were done competing, I don't think we were not in a restaurant somewhere. We're just eating the whole time.
Oh man, no, I'm super, super excited for it for sure.
Yeah, it's gonna be dope. So long list of accomplishments, Nam. We just named it. You were a national champion from juvenile all the way up through to senior. So you're not that old either. How old are you now?
23.
Yeah, 23 years old. How old were you when you won senior?
My first senior title, I think I was 15 or 16. I don't know. It feels like it was a long, long time ago, but it really wasn't that long ago. But it was around that age, I would say. Like, I was still in my teens when I won my first senior national title.
Yeah, that's crazy. So that means you were winning from a very young age. How old were you in juvenile when you won?
8 years old. That felt like forever ago. Like, I don't think I even remember that event at all anymore. But yeah, no, it was, I would say, like, my upbringing, it felt pretty fast. I mean, just like everything went by really quick. I wasn't able to kind of like just, you know, experience everything the way one would normally experience things. It kind of just, I was in and out of things real quick. And then it was kind of almost like the same with these national championship events that I went to at such a young age. I never understood the impact of how important a Canadian's event was until like when I was maybe a junior or even senior, when I really started to understand the full impact of it. But no, I mean, like, nonetheless, I still like had a good time at each level, obviously. And yeah, we're chilling out. We're chilling this year, man.
That's crazy. So you were pretty, yeah. So you were like 2 years old when you started skating, right?
No, I was five.
Five. Five yeah. to eight and winning. What?
That's impressive. Yeah. I didn't know you didn't start till five.
So I started playing hockey when I was four, but then figure skating when I was five. And then for the 3 years, I played both. I did both hockey and figure skating. And then after I won juvenile nationals, that's when I was like, we're cutting hockey. We're going to like full steam it ahead with figure skating. And kind of glad I made that decision that time around.
That's wild, though. So what would you say, that was it just winning that nationals that really changed everything for you and your family towards skating? Or were you already starting to get pretty like heavily dedicated to it before that?
I think like around like when I was a novice, that was when my family and I decided to fully commit to skating, like put most of the resources into it. But even like juvenile and pre-novice, I was still kind of like just doing it recreationally, wasn't really putting in the hours and all that. But yeah, no, I mean, like, as time went on, we kind of like started, or my parents started to realize that this could be something. And I just sort of went along with it. Yeah, here we are, man. It's been a long, well, I don't know how many years it's been, but it's been pretty long, pretty long career that I feel.
That's about 18 years from the time you would have started.
That's brutal. That's brutal, man.
That's crazy. I started figure skating when I was 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you actually, you progressed like a lot quicker then. Like if when you started at 11 and you're like a year older than me, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm 25. Yeah. I was 11 and when I was 14, I landed my first axel, the double axel.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow. Oh,
yeah. Wow. Like bad. I started kind of figure skate, like trying figure skates on when I was like, I would say 10. Because I got kicked out of hockey when I was 9. So then I was in can skating and stuff. Yeah, don't laugh. Yeah, I know.
I remember this one because on my Instagram story, you put it on there.
Yeah. So I was like 11, but I was also like, I think some of it was I was just older. So I was more aware of your body, but you were 5 to 8 from going from like five. Most kids who are 5 years old can, like in my can skate program, are walking on the ice, like literally just walking with their skates on, not jumping around and doing axles.
Yeah. Well, back then it was pretty rare to see like somebody that young, like do most of their stuff, like do all their doubles and like pushing double axles and triples. Right.
Yeah.
But now like in today's, you know, age of our sport, you basically should be starting like your triples at the age of 8.
Especially if you're a Russian woman.
Yeah. Like you got to hit that requisite. Otherwise you're not it, you know, but, no, it's crazy to see how much the sport has evolved, like internationally, and it's fun. It's fun to see, but also like quite terrifying at the same time. Because now, like on Instagram, on my Explore page, I see like 10-year-olds to like 13-year-old girls and boys ripping off quads with like arms over their heads. It's mind baffling, you know? Like, I can't do like a triple jump with an arm over my head. Like, ridiculous. So, yeah.
It's pretty fun to watch Mike do a double toe with his arms above his head.
I try, but I can't either. After starting with so much success, couldn't have had really much more success than you did running around as a little bumblebee on the ice. Was that pre-novice, your little bumblebee? That was my favorite. Novice.
Yeah.
Novice. Yeah, that one was classic. Still stands out. How did you deal with all of that success and then hitting your first big growth spurt?
Oh, man. It was honestly like really tough to deal with, just because, like, not to make it sound like in a super braggy way, but I was not used to dealing with struggles or challenges that I needed to overcome. When I was younger, all these jumps came to me really quick, and I was able to get like my triple axel at around like age 11 or age 12. And then after that period, I started to hit my growth spurt, and everything just felt so foreign to me. Like, my body, my center of gravity, every day I felt really different going into training. And instead of just trusting the process with my team around me, I kind of just like went headfirst into just changing techniques every single day to accommodate or compromise what I was feeling with my body. And obviously that kind of like led me into a deeper hole. And I think I went through like 3 or 4 growth spurts in my lifetime so far. And all 3 or 4 times, like, I did the exact opposite of what my team wanted me to do, which was to take it nice and slow, be patient with the process. I just kind of like skipped over everything and hoped for the best. And that clearly didn't work. So yeah, but that first time around was like brutal, because like, I remember like crying almost every single day from training, because like I couldn't do like a triple sow or like one of those easier triples where I could like do them like that. So it was tough to deal with, but you know, looking back at it, I kind of use that as like a huge learning experience and apply that to other like obstacles that I face in my life.
How old were you during this first growth spurt? 12, 13 years old?
Yeah, I'd say like from 12 to 14, those 2 years were really like the hard-hitting growth spurt feels, basically. And then after that, like 15, 17, around like that time, it started to like slow down a bit, but I could still feel it for sure. And I didn't really kind of just trust the team at all.
Well, would you now, like, going through all that, obviously you said you've used that in a different way towards other aspects of your life, like you've learned from it. Would you say that you kind of gained some different confidence and mindset from that after you did eventually overcome, you know, the growth spurt and figured out your things back? Like, did that give you a different mindset after each growth spurt as well?
A little bit. Not as much as I thought it would. Because during that time also, there was a lot of things on my plate. I was dealing with...
Well, you moved parents as well, right? Like, your family, like, and everything moved
all over the place.
Yeah.
And training at the cricket when Yuzu and Javi were there, and just being exposed to their fan base, all of that stuff got to my head. And it wasn't just the growth spurt that I was dealing with, but there was, you know, like, just new skaters coming into the club, like... And then my parents were there, and then the coach's expectations, all of that was kind of like piling up on me. And so I never got the time to like sit down with myself and like reflect on all of these growth spurt experiences that I should have taken and used as a lesson at the time. Now, like, I use it because I have a much clearer mindset of the things that I need to do. But back then it was hard because I was just so like, I was like bouncing off of everything that was happening around me instead of focusing on myself.
That's also hard though. You were young too. Yeah. It's a part of it, right? It's not like you're 20 years old going, oh, I need to think about it this way. You're 13, 14 years old. We're not mature in any sense. I could probably argue we're still not mature, but.
No, it's funny because like my parents used to like go on about just being mature at like a young age, right? And I would hate them for saying it because I felt like sacrificing my social hours from my school friends and all that and committing most of my hours at the rink was already somewhat mature for like people around my age, like which was like 10, 11, 12, 13. So I never really like was on their side for that. And so I would rebel against them and not listen to them. And then that would like seep into like rebelling against my coaches and then just kind of like basically falling off the track, really. But, you know, as time goes on, you kind of like develop some sort of maturity, no matter how slow or how fast that comes in. But yeah, so just give it time, you know?
Yeah. Well, and look, I want to touch back on when you were training with Yuzu and Javi. That was obviously Yuzu and Javi are arguably two of the best male skaters in history. That was also kind of when the cricket kind of blew up again for the first time in a long time. The cricket's always been very yep. prestigious and everything, but that was the first time it was like Yuna and then all of a sudden Javi and Yuzu were there, right? And then all right. of a sudden the people were turning in and out of the cricket like crazy internationally. So how was that, especially because you were pretty young? You were 12, 13-ish?
Yeah, I was 12, 13 when I first moved to the cricket. And at the time, as you said, it was just Yuzu and Javi, basically. So there wasn't much hype or energy around it just yet. And then I think the following year and a half after that, that's when things really took off. Like every summer or the summer, like a whole bunch of new skaters were coming in and like our elite sessions were like super packed. And then also too, every summer Yuzu's like media, like entourage, whatever would come in. And it was the first time I ever experienced something like that. And it was overwhelming because there's just so many cameras, so many like media personnel there. All you could hear was like the cameras just flashing by as you was skating. And it was also too, when I didn't know how to like channel all that outside energy and use it as fuel to like boost my own skating. I kind of like just crumbled under all of that, you know, external adrenaline that, you know, Yuzu's energy brings in and then all of the new kids coming in. And so it was hard for me to deal with. But then I think during my time in the cricket, Brian Orser kind of like helped me harness that adrenaline and that helped me become a better skater. And now all it is for me, like this season especially, is just relying on that external adrenaline to push me through. But yeah, no, at the cricket, like I was there from like when it was kind of dead and then the transition. And then I left when it started to really just like pile up to like where it's at right now, basically.
What were some of the biggest lessons that Brian taught you?
So first being like how to like control your energy, control the adrenaline, channel it basically. And kind of adopting a competitive mindset. This is another lesson that I really take to heart even to this day, is that sometimes like you'll see skaters when they watch other competitors, you know, they kind of like be affected by it. But for me, I always look to what my competitors are doing because that now fuels me to do what they're doing or try to, you know, be even better than them. A prime example of that is actually when I was first learning like my quad sal and all that stuff, I saw like my Russian friend land his quad toe on Instagram. And I remember this, I was on the bus going from school to the rink. I see it on my Instagram and I'm like, okay, this is like firing me up. Like I feel my heart rate already like going up as I'm sitting on the bus watching him do his quad toe. And so I go into the rink and I just picture this quad toe in my mind and I go around and I do quad toe and I landed it, all because of just watching my competitors do something that lit a fire underneath my ass. And I think that that's one of like the biggest lessons that I've ever learned from Brian, is that, you know, just you don't have to rely just on yourself to create that energy, even though it's super, super important. But if you want to take it, you know, to the next level, it doesn't hurt to rely on your other competitors to move you, basically.
Yeah, you know, I think Brian has a big experience in that with the Battle of the Bryans, and skating was so big back then, right? Like him, Kurt, Elvis, all that time, like how popular it was. So they definitely had to figure out how to harness that energy, because like imagine like what Yuzu is like is what every figure skater used to be like back in the '90s, '80s, and '90s is crazy.
100%, yeah, and like for us to just kind of like get a taste of that, basically, that's crazy, you know.
Yeah,
like, I'm kind of glad that I never got to skate in that era, because otherwise I know I would have just like crumbled underneath it.
Mike and I would love it. We'd be doing stuff to each other on the camera all the time. Nationals in 20, the last nationals that we had, so 2020, Mike, they skate, we skated, we came second, they came first. We're both super pumped. He's walking, we're walking towards each other after they skated just in the back of the house there. And like, we're in the middle of an interview, Evan and I, and they're walking down. So I just like, 1 second, and I go over. Mike pours a full bottle of water on my head. They catch it on camera. He goes,
mid interview,
he catches it on camera. He's like, trying to make figure skating look cooler in the back of house.
I know, because everybody's so used to seeing us like all like dialed in, and you know, it's kind of like boring to like the non-skating people. But it's things like that is kind of crazy for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was good, Mikey. We'll get some more moments of those, eh?
Oh yeah, we're definitely gonna have a couple more of those moments for sure. Awesome.
So that's awesome. So and now obviously you learned that was said your biggest lesson you learned from Brian. What else in the sense of did you learn from your training mates, from Yuzu and Javi at that point? Did you find you learned anything from them besides, I guess, obviously that competitive fire would have helped, especially with those two, but
getting to work.
Yeah.
Like their work ethic to this day, I don't think I've never seen anybody can match what Yuzu and Javi can do in training. I think that especially after, like, if they didn't have a great competition and they come back, holy moly, like the whole rink can feel the energy that these two guys put into training after a bad competition. They will just put in the work to like redo these parts that they missed at an event, and then continue to improve on that. Like, honestly, as I said, like, I wish that I could have that like ability to push myself to like 300%, because you'll see these two drenched after like a 45 minute session in like a cold rink. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, it's pretty easy for us like national athletes to get going like that, but I don't think I've ever seen anything like the two of them do on practice sessions.
And would you say they fed off of each other though? Like would it have been the same if the two of them hadn't have been there, do you think? Or
I don't think if it was just
Yuzu or just Javi there?
Yeah, if they were like separated, I don't think they would have achieved the same result. They definitely benefited off of each other there. I mean, of course they're like rivals and like sometimes they'll butt heads, but the majority of the time, like they'll actually like they work off of each other and they push each other to become a better version of themselves, like both as human beings and as skaters.
Yeah, but I mean, for a while it was who was winning, Javi or Yuzu? At almost every competition, who was winning, Javi or Yuzu? It was back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah, it was always like a switch up between the two, basically. But I missed my time training at the cricket club.
After the cricket club, what led your move to San Jose? Was it just a little bit too much craziness going on at the cricket, trying to become a little bit more independent? What led you to that move to California?
My last year through cricket, it kind of just got really overwhelming. My relationship with, I think, the relationship between myself and Brian kind of was like starting to taper off a bit. It just felt like none of the work was being productive. It was especially the second half of the season when I was going through another growth spurt, and I really was not listening to Brian. It was obviously it's my fault, and I don't blame him for, you know, the way things were handled at that time. And so the move to San Jose was, I would say, a desperation move. I didn't really put much thought into it. I do remember, however, requested to go work with Raf Aratunian at the time. He said no to me. and so there I just went to like where Paulina Edmonds trained, because she and I are good friends, and I thought that with her she would help push me. And but unfortunately she had injured herself, and so basically the majority of my time at San Jose was just David Glenn and I. And so it was kind of hard to stay motivated. And then I think I was only there for like maybe 8 months. And then I came back to Toronto and I worked with Tracy Wayman.
So do you think that that made a difference of yourself as well? Like as a personality wise, like did you need to get out of the country almost to be your own person? Like Mike said, more of an independence thing, even like not just related to the skating part.
Almost, yeah, almost. I did feel like I learned some sort of responsibility slash independence while I was in California, but it clearly wasn't enough because I was so glad to be back home with my parents and just live with them and basically not have to like care about anything other than skating. But then after like a few years of living with my parents, I finally like, you know, developed that sense of, oh, I want to take ownership of my own life now, and see where it takes me. And I think that came into fruition around like mid 2018.
Now,
after, yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, just going to say, like, do you think that would have made a difference? Like if your parents hadn't have moved from Vancouver to Toronto as well? Cause like, I know for myself a big part, like I wanted to, like I was at the point, like I wasn't in a training center when I moved to Allison when I was 17, but I was definitely at the point where it was like, I needed to get out, and I got out, and I was living with the Billet family at the time. So it was like kind of like half responsibility. Like they still did like a lot of the groceries and cook dinner and stuff, but it definitely made me like, at least for myself, I appreciated skating a lot more because yeah. I was like kind of on my own in a way and had to take more ownership of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But do you feel like that even just made your, when you came back, you took more ownership of your, just your skating part, not so much to say like the, you know, cooking the food and everything,
because yeah, yeah.
That's nice.
I didn't fully appreciate life in general and skating until I actually took over everything myself. And that was mid 2018. So I think that for me, I was around 18 or 19 years old. And I think that like took way too long for me to realize that, because even when like my parents moved from Vancouver to Toronto, I never understood the impact that that had on them, like to sacrifice basically a living that they made in Vancouver to come and start from scratch in Toronto. I never really took that into account and, you know, fully appreciate what they did for me. And even when I moved to California and I was on my own then and I had to do all these stuff by myself, even that time, I still did not like fully analyze like how big that was until I fully said to my parents after 2018 Worlds in Italy, let me do one more year of skating, but without your help. Like I will pay for everything and basically just do everything on my own. I'll still live, like I can, like they still let me live with them, which was nice. But I just being financially responsible, like took a really, really big to my brain. So yeah.
Yeah, I felt that way too. Cause when I moved, my family had always obviously paid for my skating, but when I had, yeah. We decided to move, obviously it costs a little bit more than where I was, and I had to start working to help pay for stuff, and that so it definitely makes you one, be grateful, I think, for your family and what they've done for you, and then at the same time you're like, I'm not wasting any time because I'm actually paying for this myself now, like I can't
No, like I even no matter how many times my dad and I have bashed heads like growing up in this in my career, that will never taint my perspective of my parents. Ever since I started paying for my skating, I am so grateful for everything that they've done up until 2018. Even now, when they still support me no matter what, but the financial responsibility they had for me was crazy. So yeah. Now, like, I'm like, I understand their struggles.
Oh, I get what you're saying now. Sorry.
Like, yes. Now everything you said to me is all making sense. It's not in one ear, out the other. It's all like now, like piecing itself together in my brain.
That's awesome. So, you know, we're going to touch back about one other thing before our next point that we want to get to. But you obviously have skated in different places. You skated with two major, major icons of figure skating in the men's event that drove you. Let's talk about some other more, somebody that's quite far away from you. I think about 6,500 kilometers away from here, Mike?
6,500 kilometers. I just looked it up.
Nice. So about 6,500 kilometers away from you is Keegan. And how has that helped push you? Because, you know, you guys FaceTime each other when you're on the ice.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. It's honestly, like, Keegan is my best friend, as everybody knows. He's been there for me through thick and thin. And our times of communication is like all over the place. Like, we FaceTime each other during practice sessions, sometimes even during practice sessions of official competitions. And like, I'll call him before I even get on the ice to compete. Like, I think that what we have is kind of unique in the sense that you don't really see much of that in the figure skating world, because everybody's so, you know, locked in into their own things. But to speak for the both of us, I think what works for us as skaters is that we rely on each other to push, to motivate each other. And I think that kind of really came to light, I think, a couple of years ago. Because when he first came here, I hated him. I wanted to, like, just punch him. I hated him so much because he would cut me off in practices. And his reasoning behind that was I skated really slow and he couldn't get around me. I agree that I skated slow back then, but, like, he could have found space on, like, Olympic size ring to come around me, not, like, go behind my ass and just, like, stick on me, like, the whole, like, 30 seconds of it, like, things like that. But after the 2018 Olympics, he and I really got, like, finally started to get close. And then the season after, we shared the same event, and we were forced to kind of, like, get to know each other, bond with each other, and now we're best friends.
That's awesome. You know, I do think it makes a big difference. You know, Mike and I have talked about this before. Mike and I have had conversations about this before. I look up to Mike a lot. We've been best friends since I'm, like, moved to Allison, and this stuff is hard, man. Like, this stuff is really hard, even when you love it. So, like, sometimes it's good to have somebody who you can kind of share that those experiences with, especially, like, for yourself, like, with Keegan. Like, you guys are in the same event. Mike and I are in the same event. Like, you know, there's some days where you're like, I don't know. Like,
yeah. When, like, you have somebody in the same boat, like, just, I don't know, you're struggling. Basically, when you two are doing it at the same time, you actually feel better about it and you'll be able to, like, pick yourself up and continue improving. Right. But if it's just you, basically, right.
Yeah.
It's so hard to get yourself out of that hole.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally get it, man.
Yes, it's definitely crucial to find that peer that you can lean on and experience that friendship with. Thanks, Trent, for being there for me. Couple of weeks have been a little bit tough, and we've been leaning on each other, to say the least.
Yeah, we got you, buddy. Always there for you, man. Yeah, so no, that's awesome that you got, obviously, that you and Keegan, and you're able to do that from so far away. Thankful for technology nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's... I think without technology, we would not be where we're at today. And no. It's a good thing and a bad thing. So,
yeah. Awesome. So, you know, before we get on to a little bit more of fun stuff, we just have one question left. You know, you obviously, you went through a lot with your family, went through a lot of emotions, a lot of ups and downs, being a child phenom per se in skating. Do you have any advice for other parents, for their child, for our listeners, for their children, if they're doing well in sport or excelling at anything?
I think that there's nothing wrong with parents being involved. But from my experience, again, I'm not first and foremost, I'm not a parent, so if any parents are listening and they hear me say this, please don't attack me. But I think for parents, they need to listen to the kid. They got to listen to the kid. They can't be doing things for the parents' interests, out of their own interest for the kid. And there's been a couple times where my parents were like that. You know, they acted solely on their own interest instead of listening to what I wanted. And I think it would have helped if, you know, there was a couple of things that went my way instead of their way in how I progressed in my career, especially with the growth spurt, because I remember during that time, when I was going through all those physical changes, I would skate 7 days a week. I would skate 7 days a week and it would be crazy. And I wanted to have like a day or two of resting, but, yeah, no, like parents, just listen to your kids. Like maybe they have something like good to bring to the table and it'll help everybody involved, to really progress the kid's career. So, yeah, but there's nothing wrong to be super involved with what your kids are doing because, you know, it's all fun. It's all part of the journey, basically.
Yes, great answer there, Nam. You may not be a parent, but you've directly lived through these experiences. So there's nobody better to ask for advice than yourself.
Dope.
Nice. So, all right, we're going to move on from that. Now, I don't think you're much of a reader. Are you?
I do read.
You do read? What do you read?
Well, okay. This one book I'm reading right now, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Okay.
You guys heard of that?
Nope. Great.
I think you guys would enjoy this book, to be honest. But I only read it when like I'm traveling because I have nothing else to do. So
so that's coming with you tomorrow?
It's on my iPad, yeah.
Oh, okay. So that would be your book recommendation for our listeners?
That is my book recommendation. Or like the Harry Potter series.
Yeah. Yeah, I got those. They're downstairs. I got all them. Those are always ready to go.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So now we're going to hit you off with some rapid fire questions. Okay.
Yep.
You ready for it?
No.
No. Yes. Okay. What is your favorite food?
Sushi.
Ooh. I hope they have good sushi.
I'm guessing they will.
Yeah.
I hope so. That's the only place. Japan's the only place I've had real sushi. Like not just like when I'm here, I only have vegetable sushi. I ate like real raw sushi when we were in Japan. That's the only place I've ever tried it.
Yeah. You won't need to cover it in spicy mayo sauce over there.
Exactly. No.
Who was your inspiration as a 5-year-old figure skating athlete? Who did you look up to?
Kurt Browning.
Nice. Good choice. What is the best restaurant in Toronto?
Canoe Restaurant.
The what?
Canoe Restaurant.
What's in the
what kind of food?
Well, yeah,
it's like I think it's Canadian food. It's a Canadian restaurant, basically. It's great.
Poutine with maple syrup.
It's like a bougie version of that stuff, I think. It's on the 54th floor. Great view of the city. It's a great place to take, you know, your partner out on a, you know, on a day or whatever. But no, it's my favorite restaurant. A little pricey. But whatever.
Move the partner aside. I'm just going to take Mike there.
I'm in. What kind of tunes are you listening to during your pre-comp warm-up?
BTS or Daft Punk.
Okay. Doritos or Lay's?
Lay's.
Like just plain or like any kind of Lay's?
Barbecue. Really?
It's like, I'll eat it, but like, I don't know.
Come on.
Doritos all the way. Doritos crushes Lay's. I don't even think really? It was going to, I was not expecting you or anybody to say Lay's.
Oh. Sorry to disappoint.
And for our final question, what is your favorite program of your whole career that you have skated?
The Beatles.
Beatles. Yeah. Nice.
That was a good one. That was dope.
Only because, Mike, you added a personal taste to it with the eyebrows.
Yes.
Because I know he kept doing it to me. Like every time we skated by each other, whether it be at a competition event or like just practicing together, he would do that to me. And then at Skate Canada, he's like, throw it in one time. So I did it. And I could hear Mike just hollering in the stands because I did. Even though there's so much going on. Like all I heard was Mikey's voice when I did the eyebrow thing.
Yes, that was definitely a good one. One of my favorites, though, it's still the B program. It's hard to beat that B program.
I think it's the outfit from the Bumblebee program, man.
Yeah, on it, like, Joanne McLeod designed that, and then my mom put it together. And Joanne's, like I love Joanne McLeod and her creativity, but what came into this B program costume, really questionable. The right side of my chest, a big eyeball. Okay, and then on my left ass cheek, we had a wing. And then behind me, we used pipe cleaners as antennas. Like, I get that we're trying to, like, you know, be a bee, but, like, I think that these details may be a little too much for a novice boy.
We're just trying to make you stand out more, Nam.
Yeah, it was good times, though. Good times.
Oh, it's great.
Still memorable 15 years later, though.
Never gonna live that one down.
Oh jeez. I should use that as my exhibition program one time.
Yeah. Huh? Or bring back your
100% you should.
That one, or bring back your nerd one from Vank the games. That one was good. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually performed that I think two or three years ago at a local club show, and it still felt really good. So might bring that one back too.
It was good. Awesome. All right, Nam. Well, thanks for jumping on with us, buddy. You've had a great career, and you know, you've already said it, but I hope you're enjoying every part of this season. It's a dope season. I'm really excited to see what happens for you, and I'm there. I'm literally at every competition with you this season again. So,
yes, buddy. Good luck next week. You just crushed a clean, sharp program at sectionals. Ride that energy into next week, both of you. Yes, kick some butt, stay in your lane, and do your thing.
Gotcha, baby. Thank you. Appreciate it, boys.
No problem. Thanks, buddy. So, ice labbers, get to work in your labs, and
peace and love, and be kind to one another.
This episode of the Ice Lab Podcast was produced by Trent Michaud and Michael Marinaro.
Music produced by Hugo Schwinard.
If you haven't already, share with your friends and leave a review.
Follow us on Instagram at Ice Lab Podcast for more information and to stay up to date.